My name's Nick Roush, and my favorite movie is Superbad.
Welcome in again. My favorite movie is podcast. I'm Dusty Koshreza and Mitch Wiley. And today we have Nick Roush. Nick, do you want to introduce yourself a little bit?
Yeah, I'm from Kentucky Sports Radio. You know me as the guy talking trash to the Louisville fans on Twitter. I've been with KSR since 2012, full-time, going on six seasons now, covering the Kentucky football team. So very happy to join y'all to mix things up a little bit today to talk about one of my favorite movies ever. It's nice. It's just a nice change of pace to talk films instead of football. A different F.
We will do our absolute best to stay away from Kentucky or anything Louisville. Mitch is actually a Louisville fan, so things may get a little contentious if we start talking about cats and cards.
I'm glad you're wearing a red shirt, though. I appreciate that.
It's go Tops. Go
okay.
Tops. Go.
Okay.
Go Tops. Go Tops.
There we go.
That's fair.
Yeah, Mitch is
my wife went there.
Question.
Yeah.
So, Nick, so your favorite movie, Superbad. When was the first time you saw Superbad?
Well, I had when you initially asked me on Dusty, I had to go through my brain because, you know, there's a lot of movies you watch quite a bit. Like I've seen Forrest Gump a million times. Love that movie. When I was a kid and when I was out sick, I would always watch either Blazing Saddles or Dazed and Confused. Those were like the two DVDs that I always went to on sick days and would lay around, and they never got old. Loved those movies, but I had to go with Superbad because Superbad was released in theaters in, I think, 2007, if I'm not mistaken, and it was a summer movie. And in 2007, that was right after I finished my freshman year of high school. So this movie really...
Peak.
Yo, I mean, like, this movie was basically the story of my life at that time as it happened. And that's what really, I mean, I was grounded for most of that summer because I got caught trying to go get booze for something or another. You know, that's why this is just the perfect film. It resonated so well because it came out at the perfect time for me to love it. It had... not only was the plot line my everyday life, but they also talked like me. You know, there was dick jokes and, you know, they're talking. I think that was one thing I saw an interview with Seth Rogen where he was like, you know, a lot of teen movies didn't sound like how we talked as teenagers. So wanted to write one of those. And this thing sounds like as crude as we talked back in the day. Cause like now you get a little bit older, you know, you'll drop some F bombs here and there when you're frustrated, but you talk like a
professional adult.
Devil.
Yeah. An adult.
Yeah. Like
we're professional adults now.
Exactly. But when you're in high school, you're just cussing and you're talking about boobs and dicks. And, you know, I mean like in this movie just really hit that on the head. So, and it was great for, of so many reasons, but the way in which it really spoke to me, I mean, I can't, every time I watch it, I go back to 15-year-old Nick and I feel like a kid again.
And it's such a relax, like almost a reprieve from, you know, we've advanced a society in a good direction where we don't make a lot of the jokes that they've made, but it's such a relaxing that you can kind of let your guard down for an hour and a half, an hour 45, and say, you know what, this reminds me of my childhood, for better or for worse. It's where we're at.
Right.
Nick, let me ask you this. You mentioned getting caught trying to get booze. Can you take us through that situation, that story? How did you, did you have a fake ID or?
Well, so that's what's like, the reason why Superbad is more than just a kind of smutty, you know, like every generation has one of those, like, what was the Cheekies or what was that movie in the 80s?
Porky's.
Yeah. Like you have movies like that, but a lot of people just write it off as smut. But the reason why this is a movie that kind of stands the test of time is because it's really just a movie about friendship. And I kid you not, how I got caught was very similar to this story where I was in the woods with a couple of my neighborhood buddies And, you know, we got a bottle of Heaven Hill.
Did you say in the woods?
Yeah, yeah. We were we called it the greenhouse because that's where the greens getting nice. Smoked in the greenhouse. But we weren't smoking nice. Weed. We were smoking like Black and Milds, yeah. you know.
Yeah, what every high schooler does.
Yeah, yeah. We got a bottle of Heaven Hill vodka, and we were going to, you know, we were going to chug some of it down. I didn't know how alcohol affected me, and it absolutely wrecked me, taking shots of Heaven Hill and chasing it with Coke. I didn't drink that's vodka like, for like 7 years.
That's like Evan in the bathroom where he's like down the hatch and just starts chugging vodka. Oh.
And then chases it with beer. What a wild decision to make. I couldn't wrap my mind around the fact that he loves, and what was the brand? Old Milwaukee, I think was the brand. Oh, he's chasing vodka with Old Milwaukee. What, who are you? What psychopath does that?
That, but that's what you do when you drink as a teenager. You get whatever beer you can steal out of the fridge. I think I stole some like skunked Coors Lights that, like, you know, this tastes bad, but it also tastes bad because it was just bad beer that was 5 years old.
Yeah. But no but redeeming quality about that.
No, none at all. But we were in the woods drinking, and I don't remember this at all, but I woke up in my bed stark naked, and I had to have my buddy Simmons tell me what happened. And when he tells this story too, he goes into great detail. It's like a 25-minute deal. But essentially, I passed out in the woods. I just laid back and was done. And he tried to carry me out of the woods, a la Seth.
Yeah.
Carrying him, exactly saving him out of the party. And he did for a little while, but I was too big. Like, I'm like 6'6", you know, 200 pounds at the time. He can't pull me around, so he has to call his dad to come pick me up. And, you know, his dad, it starts raining, you know, and he's like, oh god, we're really gonna be stuck, dad, just come get us back here. And his dad's chewing him out the whole time, even though he didn't drink. I was the drunk one. In the meantime, I just go stumbling off somewhere. Luckily, there was a motion sensor light that like went on. He was like, oh god, he's got to be back there. Oh, I almost fell into a pool. It was a whole ordeal, but he rescued me. And that was my first, that was when I learned how hard liquor, it'll take you off your feet. So, and that was not so different than Seth saving Evan.
So this isn't just a movie for you. There is so much personal.
It's a documentary at this point.
Yeah.
really, really pulls.
Except our style. The one thing that I like about these movies too is it doesn't feel very dated because they aren't dressed like you dressed in that era. And also, what's the hell up with all of these high schools that they're shooting at? I want to know what kind of high school has like a convenience store on campus and all these open area. Like, these high schools and movies always look like
it's California high schools. It's just they're a different breed out there.
I mean, they look. Looks like college campuses. I mean, like, come on.
I think it's just a product of being in California where the weather's nice and
El just, Segundo guess, High School.
Is that where they filmed it?
Shot at. Yeah, we need to, boys, I think we need to move to California. We want our kids to grow up there. In that kind of environment. Yeah, that sounds incredible.
Exactly.
No, that's such a good point. Like, who are these kids that they had this much freedom, right? That the bullies were just hanging outside of the local gas station right before just hawking loogies on people. I would have been terrified to go anywhere if I was in high school doing that. So Nick, take me.
And you only see the parents too. You only see the mom at the beginning.
No,
and it was just so they could make a joke about booze.
And nobody has. That was it. Outside of Jules mentioning her older
brother
or Becca mentioning her older sister to buy her alcohol, there's no older siblings. Mm-hmm. We're just in such a black hole of this society. So Nick, tell me about your relationship with movies. Like, does film play a really large part in your life? Do you and your family really enjoy those lazy days with movies? Did you start young? Kind of walk me through that.
Ooh, I was. We were Disney Channel movies as a kid.
What's the best Disney Channel original?
We actually had this discussion on the radio today. I am.
Oh, really?
I like Johnny Tsunami. Johnny Tsunami or Brink. Those two kind of go hand in hand. I mean, they're very similar.
Has to be Brink. I'll die on the hill.
I'm a Halloween Town guy.
But
VHS.
I know that a lot of people, you know, VHS. But like, we had a stack of tapes in our entertainment center, and we had all of the Disney movies. That was what we. that was what our kind of mainstay was. And then as we got older, like I remember the first time watching Forrest Gump, it was in the car on the way to a vacation, where, you know, that's how we did. So we were, as we started to get older, you know, you start seeing more and more. There was a movie theater close by. We're around that time, the old Dixie Dozen, for everybody in Louisville, they know all about the Dirty D. It was a notorious place, but also like that was your date spot, you know, and went to see a lot of movies then. And my wheelhouse, when it comes to drama, I kind of like, you know, a good space one. The comic book movies are fine, but I love these big budget comedies that we don't get as much anymore.
Outside of the golden age.
Like, I remember bringing my brother to watch Dodgeball. I convinced my mom that he was old enough to go see it. He was not. But
How old was he at the time?
A hilarious movie. Probably 9, 10 years old. So, you know.
He really loves Steve the Pirate. That was the next 10 Halloweens he dressed up as Steve.
Yeah. But now I don't watch movies as much as I used to. I'm more of a sitcom guy because it's a little bit shorter. Don't have as much time on my hands. But I still love the classic Lazy Sunday FX kind of cable comedy where it's a Sandler or, one that I've enjoyed more as I got older. It was Couples Retreat. You don't really get that when you're a teenager, but when you're a little bit older, you're like, oh God, come on, this nails it. So I like to keep things light for the most part, and that's why, you know, Superbad's right up my alley.
So it sounds kind of like films that you watched in formative years that really related to you kind of stick, right? The Forrest Gump you watched on the way to a vacation when you were younger, probably a great memory. The Superbad is revelatory of your life and where you were at in your life. Do you find that to be true?
Yeah. I mean, you know, obviously there's there are some that like, you know, you gotta go to theaters to watch Endgame or something like that. But for the most part, my movie watching has been a little bit more restricted as of late, and I like to scratch that nostalgic itch, and I like to keep things light, you know, like I don't need dead dog movies or cancer or all that. Like, you know, if I'm going to get a drama, it's like an old Western or we're going to outer space like that. I like that the Ad Astra movie. That was fun. The Tom Hanks Western that came out recently. Those are fun change ups for the most part. Let's keep it nice and light.
So what's your guilty pleasure then?
I like a good pranking kind of movie as
and practical
well.
Jokers,
like,
yeah.
That
Bad Trip on Netflix.
See, that one, that reminds me of like old school Jackass, yes, where you just get like the reactions. You know, Borat was like the master, you know, that was the piece de resistance, you know, like that was just a thing of beauty. So but I don't have too many real guilty pleasures other than, you know, My wife gets me. She's like, oh, we got to watch a space movie this time. Okay, well, I'm going to sleep.
What's her favorite movie?
Man, she was a big Napoleon Dynamite fan.
That's another quotable comedy from like the 2000s.
She has a Tina, come get your dinner, your fat lard hoodie that she wears from time to time.
What a long quote to put on a sweatshirt.
Yeah, and it's literally just a terrible cartoon of it just being slopped on down, you know? So
that's such a nice change of pace too, because every girl we've talked to, their favorite movie has been something super dramatic. We interviewed a friend's wife, and she's a friend as well. Pride and Prejudice was her favorite movie, and it was good. I enjoyed it, but sitting through 2 hours of that, I was like, okay, I'm ready to move on. This is a little too much. I get that.
Well, in for me, I guess my big guilty pleasure, like something we enjoy watching together, but you have to really commit to it, or just any Tarantino movie. Like Django. Django's great. In Inglourious Bastards, the opening scene is just like you're on pins and needles, but yeah, you got to really get into it.
And
you know?
His are fun as well. And there is definitely a guiltiness to them. You know, feel like there's controversy every time one comes out, but that's part of the draw of it.
Right.
And certainly the draw of Superbad is you're watching a movie that the title indicates to you that, look, this is not going to be some prestige drama. You know, Oscars are not coming for this movie.
It's subversive, yeah, to say the least. I mean, I just Like, I want to know who was in charge of drawing all the dicks.
I have an answer for that.
Or do you actually want to know? Is this a thought that you just want to, like, have for the rest of your life?
I just want to be the guy who gets the job of, like, all right, we need you to draw dicks as many as possible. Like, the one of him standing in front of the tank, like, Tiananmen Square. Like, that, I mean, that person, give him
that's
an award.
That's my personal favorite of the drawings, goodness. For sure, is the Tiananmen Square one.
Oh, my
God. So that was the director's brother. And he drew, in my, you know, minimal research for this movie, they said he drew close to 1,000 for the movie. and of course these are detailed and these are historical and there you go, he's got the Tiananmen Square one. And this is not
any bastard.
Yeah, I mean that one probably took that took time to do 1,000 of those.
Yeah.
Yeah, they called him the dick wrangler on set. So he took his job incredibly seriously. Incredibly seriously. So Nick, when you watch a movie, and you've talked about it a little bit, what are you looking for when you're like, okay, this is the movie I want to watch. This is something I would pay to go see in theaters. Something that keeps drawing you back. Is there a genre? Is there a theme? What would it be?
You know, it's funny that you mentioned. I don't like trailers that show too much. I hate the new trend of let's show you the shock. And then, like the big twist. So, Stranger Things, that annoyed the hell out of me. Like, I actually thought that there was a case that David Harbour was done. I even forget his name on the show. I go, he's one of those guys that I forget his fake name, and then I forget his real name, and I just keep calling him one of the
people. Yeah, that guy from Stranger Things. Yeah.
Yeah. But, like, it took them all of, like, 2 seconds to take away any sort of tension. Or suspense waiting, like, is he actually alive? You know, like, I like a good amount of suspense. And I also, to a degree, enjoy some something that's going to leave me satisfied. Kind of like that Denzel movie that they came out with HBO over the summer where there's this ambiguous ending. I don't really like that so much. I like a nice solution that... Yeah, I like a good solution where I kind of know how everything goes down at the end of it. But it actually, I finally do have a correct answer for Guilty Pleasure because it dawned on me when I was thinking of this. The kind of kids movies, I can name like Moonrise Kingdom, the Wes Anderson one. I think that's an awesome movie. It reminds me of a book I would have read in middle school and really liked. And the same thing with the Scout movie. That was on Amazon Prime, and it had Jim Gaffigan and Viola Davis, I believe. That came out last summer, and that was a great COVID watch. Where there's some nice wholesome. So that's actually my correct answer on my on what I like for my guilty pleasure movies.
Yeah. So you like light material, light things.
Yeah.
I'm gonna be honest. I think Superbad would probably be my guilty pleasure because I feel so guilty while watching it. There's the part of me that's just like, gosh, I can't like this, but I love it.
Yeah, Mitch being a seminary PhD student really gets into his core when he watches.
I just came from class and now I'm talking about Superbad. We go from Roman Catholic theology to Superbad, and it's a whiplash.
He texted me yesterday and said, please talk me out of giving this movie a 5-star. And I said, no, man, you enjoyed it. Like, just lean into it.
It's so good. Nick, what kind of person were you in high school? What kind of high schooler were you? Who do you identify most? Obviously, there's, you know, being carried drunk by your friend. You identify with Evan there.
Right. Now, the thing is, though, is like there's not really a... I feel like they really do steer away from stereotypes in this because I was the high school jock, and there's not really jocks in there, you know.
So you're Dave Franco's character. Freaking
soccer break.
Yeah, I mean, like, I forgot that was him, and that's. I'll get down that tangent in a second, but I was the jock guy, you know. I was kind of Mr. Popular, and they don't really play into that, which makes this nice because it's. It's not too like here is the formula. Yeah.
It's
for
not
high
the Breakfast
school.
Club.
It's not another.
It's
team
not the
movie.
Breakfast Club where it's like you have these five kind of archetype characters of the jock, the brain, and all that stuff. And I feel like that's kind of a theme. Have you seen Booksmart, Nick?
I have not seen Booksmart, no.
So Booksmart came out in 2019, and it's a movie that's it was basically, it even has Jonah Hill's younger sister, like in the Jonah Hill type role, but it's very similar to Superbad. And even in that movie, there's not high school stereotypes. And in Lady Bird, another high school movie that's been popular recently, there's not. I wonder if that, like, those stereotypes are just not. It's a little cheesy, too, I think.
Yeah.
And so it gives us. And high school isn't always like that. People just kind of hang out with everyone.
Yeah, I think it comes off more a satire when you play into the stereotype role, right? Because it's hard to take that seriously because we've all seen it, and it's just not done really well. Even 21 Jump Street, right? They kind of get the popular kids are the kids who care about the environment and sell drugs. Things are just so different than they were when Dazed and Confused came out.
Right.
The cool guys, Matthew McConaughey at 21, yeah. You know, hitting on high school girls.
Yeah.
It's just so different. Nick, you should check out Booksmart. They call it this generation's Superbad. It's actually really good.
Yeah.
Linklater had a good movie about it. Everybody Wants Some or Everybody Wants.
Oh, that is
you.
A great college movie.
And that's it really is just like a college version of a high school movie where it kind of debunks the notion that everybody fits this certain stereotype because they just hop around to all of the different. Each night is we're going to a different kind of party. We're going to a cowboy party one night. We're going to we're gonna be jocks this night, and and to be frank, that's kind of how I was as well. Where I had my frat hard phase, I had my country music phase, and then I end up coming back to kind of who I am, which is kind of a jock, but don't really care too much.
It's a circle pseudo of life jock, right there.
Which yeah, things are much more complex. Not everybody plugs into one specific thing. Exactly. Yes.
I can smell the fraternity basement right now just even thinking about freshman year at UK. My gosh.
Go ahead.
Give me your synopsis of Superbad.
Man, two guys on an adventure to impress some chicks and have the night of their life, and nothing goes according to plan, but they ultimately succeed in having the night of their life, which we've talked about all of this, and we have not even mentioned McLovin's journey with the cops, which that's something that really the way Hollywood portrays police officers, it can't be the same, right? Like I really enjoy the folks at New Girl, but when they came out with the movie Let's Be Cops, it couldn't have been at the worst time. Like, it was supposed to be a jokey, like, what if we just impersonated cops? And it's like, yeah, that's nice.
Yeah, plays very different today than it did in 2007.
Yeah, so different.
Yeah, yeah, but still, like, it's just because we view things through a different lens doesn't make it not funny. I think that's important.
Absolutely.
They might use words that we don't use anymore, but man, just like imagining riding around, like the thought that was going through my head when they've got their guns drawn in the restaurant, like just thinking like, man, they would be fired so fast.
Yeah. Like the body cam footage gets leaked from that and they're out immediately. That's one thing that Mitch and I really took away from, I called Mitch earlier and we were talking. I said, I've probably seen this movie 10 plus times and I never really understood how much of the movie we spend with McLovin and the cops. It's almost an equal time share and probably more in the second half of the movie. I truly think that is, Seth and Evan's relationship is what brings you and draws you in. But the cops are what make this movie so rewatchable. That relationship between Hader and Rogan, how have we not gotten a buddy cop film from them yet? Seriously,
we need a full show of Michaels and is it Slater?
Yes, yeah. Slater.
What, yeah, Michaels. Just call it Michaels and Slater. And Slater. Yeah, and just a show. I just want to hang out with them. Netflix needs to write them a blank check and just be like, make your
the Police Academy of America needs to employ them. Really get some good publicity out of it.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, this is their sales pitch to like, hey, join the force. This is what you do.
So what's our IMDb synopsis, Mitch?
IMDb is short and sweet. It says, two codependent high school seniors, are forced to deal with separation anxiety after their planned stage, a booze-soaked party, goes awry.
That's pretty. That's fair. Spot on. Yeah.
I like yours better, Nick. I'm going to be 100% honest. That's not me. That's not me sucking up. I promise. I really did.
Well, yeah. I mean, because it's not just a party. That like the goal is to get laid, which is a pretty like it makes it a high school, college sex comedy. What you know, that's a trope for you know sex comedies. But yeah, I think it draws you in with that, and then it's kind of that the last 20 minutes. It really shows you what the movie is actually all about.
Well,
which is the friendship, and even, like you mentioned.
The thing that I like, too, that makes it feel more real is they all want to get laid, but yet they're so afraid to get laid. There's, to quote the great, I don't even know what his name is in the movie, but 40-year-old virgin, you know? You're putting the pussy on a pedestal. Like, that's what every high school kid does. Yeah. You are thinking so, you want to be in this club because it's an exclusive club, and it's supposed to be the coolest thing ever, but there's so much anxiety about making it happen that there's fear. And you kind of, whenever he's like, oh, you just got a casual bottle of lube and like, what do you think we're doing here? Like, this is just the first step. And I just love how, cause that there is, they do nail that. They nail a lot of stuff, and it goes back to what makes the movie feel so genuine.
When they, I mean, think about how in front of the times, unfortunately in front of the times, like Seth Rogen and Evan Greenberg were when they talked about, hey, maybe it's not a great idea to hook up with drunk women when you're sober. Like, that's probably a bad thing, right? Mm-hmm. These are the two horniest kids you'll ever meet, but they also have a fairly strong moral compass when it comes to inappropriate and disappropriate actions. So I think that really stuck with me was, you know, they're kind of ridiculous, but that's how we all were in high school. We were just stupid, and we thought with completely different heads than we think with today.
Yeah.
And you hit that on the head.
Exactly.
No,
and it's just like the lengths that they go to of like, okay, this is the objective, and we like nothing is going to stand in our way. Like
nothing.
So yeah. Nick, let me ask you this, like kind of get into the nitty gritty of the movie. What's your favorite stretch of the movie? Like when is it the movie like firing on all cylinders?
I think it is, because there's a lot of good tertiary moments. Like they even make like the casual, we're just making tiramisu, like a funny montage, you know? So there's a lot of moments that kind of go unsung, but I think it's gotta be from whenever they, it's as soon as McLovin gets punched in the face, and then it's until they finally reach the party. I mean, I know that's probably a good 45, like it's a pretty long chunk there.
Yeah. The second act of the movie is your favorite.
Yeah. Well,
and it
brings the jokes.
The introduction of the cops is just such, like the whole comedic dynamic just reaches another level once you get Bill Hader.
Yes.
And and Seth Rogen in there. I think that's the best stretch too. I will say the first, just like the cold open, like of them talking on the phone, driving, going to the convenience store. I mean, that sets up so much of the comedy that follows. And I think that's a really good stretch too.
Yeah. And there was a part too that like the little new, like you really set the tone by showing how close these guys are, that they're going to be talking to each other on a cell phone on the way to go see each other.
Yeah, when cell phones and they don't even skip a beat, right?
Yeah, and they don't even skip a beat. He just like they just close the phone and they continue their conversation. Yeah, and that shows you that's actually exactly how Booksmart kind of starts too, or similar to how Booksmart starts.
I'm sorry, the Coen brothers don't direct porno. Like, what a genius line that is.
Yeah,
especially for somebody who loves movies, right? Like, it's just gonna kill every single time. That's gonna kill.
Mm-hmm.
So, what do you think your favorite scene is, Nick?
It's got to be just the Dick Drawing stories, because like they get a great kid to play him, and like just the look of, it's just fantastic. I will say the fight scene is also very funny, because it, you can see this buildup of just conflict, and I'm not very adversarial. And so you're just like, oh gosh, what's going to happen here? And guys are just doing cocaine on the table. And he's like, oh God, this is going to be bad.
They're going to kill that guy tonight.
I mean, all because his girlfriend gets period blood on it. I mean, like, it's just such a ridiculous.
So outrageous. So outrageous.
Yeah, yeah. So those two really, really stand out to me.
And apparently that actually happened to one of Seth Rogen's friends. And that's kind of where it came from, is that that legitimately happened. But I think the stretch at Mark's party is good. And I love the scene of, you're Jimmy's brother, right? You're the singer. And they make him sing that song. And it's just like, man, you're just at, you're around these coked up dudes. You're in way over your head. Like, you should not be
he's
here.
He's so bad at singing. Like, he's like, his voice is cracking.
And then, that, like, a couple scenes later, I noticed on my rewatch is that the cops, the song that they're listening to in the car is the same one that Michael Cera had been singing. So,
fun fact. That's a...
The guy that does coke is so good at acting like he's doing coke. It blew me away. He comes up from the table. That guy's been to one too many parties in his life, 100%.
My brother came in from Scottsdale to be here tonight. And you're not going to sing for him?
Oh, that's great. So of all of the careers that were launched in this, did you all have a favorite, like, oh, I forgot that this famous person is in this movie now.
My favorite performance in the movie is probably Bill Hader. And I'm glad that this, I mean, this wasn't, I wouldn't say this launched his career. Obviously SNL did that, but I think that his comedic talent is so good. And like the way he just plays a straight man is awesome. And I'm glad that it kind of catapulted him. Jonah Hill's career is super interesting to me. It's had like very distinct phases, and he's like kind of more of a serious actor. He even directed a movie recently. I mean, probably, like, I'm really glad that Emma Stone got like her first big break here, and I'm glad that, like, she's A-list Oscar winner, good in almost everything she does, so I'm probably like most happy that she, you know, yeah, got her career launched through it.
It blew me away in the party cocaine scene, seeing Martin Starr from Silicon Valley with a fedora. If you guys have seen that, I just would never have expected that kind of that role from him.
There's also the guy that hits Seth with his car. He's Della in Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Yes.
Yeah, that guy's hilarious. And it's so funny to me that he's willing to pay him off. And he opens up a Velcro wallet to hand over like $7. I think it's $7.
I have a warrant out for a totally nonviolent crime. There.
The entire scene with him driving them to the party where...
Bros.
It kills me. Yeah, he's like, bros, one of you guys could have set up here. You know that, right? And he's like, we're good. And then she's like, yeah, we're totally ready to get... Or I hope you're ready to get wasted. And he slowly reaches his hand back for like a high five.
Oh, man.
That entire scene, I stopped the movie and called Mitch because I was in tears laughing at that.
Yeah, he's so good.
So he would be my favorite character from the film. He and the cops, but... Every time he's on screen, he steals the scene, right? Anytime I try to do a movie review, I always include who are my scene stealers. And he would be it for this film. Every time he's on camera, you're focusing on him. He's the funniest person in the room. And this is the perfect role for the type of characters he plays. Just completely unhinged, nervous, on the edge of a mental breakdown, everywhere he's not supposed to be. Mm-hmm. You know, you watch Wet Hot American Summer, Brooklyn Nine-Nine, he always plays this character, and this is it to a T.
There's one other random cameo I noticed on the rewatch too, and that is he's just a guy at the party, and I think he's the one that remarks that McLovin is such a badass whenever the cops are pulling him out. He's Little Dwight from The Office.
Yeah, I totally forgot that he was in this.
he's the main guy. Clark Duke is his name. He's the main guy in Hot Tub Time Machine. That's probably where you kind of recognize him the most, and that's another great like lazy Sunday afternoon watch. Easy.
And people probably don't recognize him, but the guy who notices the period blood, Ben Best, he's the writer and creator of Eastbound and Down.
Yeah.
So this movie is just littered with people. Like that Seth Rogen friend group, just littered with people who... Yeah.
Right at the cusp of them getting big, too.
Yeah.
I feel like Michael's...
Yeah. It really was the...
Michael Cera was on top of the world in 2007. Like, Juno, this. Mm-hmm. He'd come off Arrested Development. Like, I feel like he is the, mm-hmm. no one else could play, like, I think people could play, you know, some of the other characters well, but I feel like he is the absolute perfect Evan.
And he's probably,
and is complimented so well by Jonah Hill.
He's probably done the least of them all, too, for probably having the most goodwill built up at the time. And the only thing I can think of him since then is whenever he's playing a cokehead and This Is the End. Which,
don't you dare disrespect Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
He had another movie like The Infinite Playlist where those just didn't hit his home quite as well for me. But him getting impaled, like, I mean, that was just, I mean, laugh out loud.
Yeah, that's kind of, and he plays the opposite of every, like, that's a big criticism of Michael Cera, right? He plays the same role every movie, this nice kind of awkward guy. And then he's in that movie and it's like, oh, he's kind of a jerk. That's like such a draw to people.
It's a refreshing.
To see them
in
their, they're natural. You know, he right, like slaps Rihanna's ass or something like that. Like, when do you ever expect Michael Cera to do something like that? Who's your favorite character in the movie?
It's probably got to be, and it's not for the name, but it's probably McLovin just because of his false, like his bravado. He has so much confidence for no reason at all. And
just so unwarranted.
Yeah. And that's, and he just pisses off, Seth so much. Like I just love having this, just imagining this tiny little nerd trying to pass his 25 who is just walking around like the cigarette in slow motion is just such a great shot. Like, I'm not a big cinematography camera shot guy, but God, that is just so perfect.
And as that's happening, the realization on like Seth and Evan's face that's like Fogel is there. Like, what the heck?
Oh man. It's great.
Him shooting the cop car with, you know, turning the gun sideways at the end of the movie just destroys me.
I am McLovin. I feel like that was like, we were talking about this, Dusty and I, before, like, that was the big selling point of Superbad, and like what people knew it for was McLovin. Like the license, driver's license, the name, like all that stuff. But on rewatch, it's like kind of the side characters that I like am left thinking about. Like, for me, my favorite characters are like, if I had to pick one, probably Officer Slater. But the cops, like, I feel like they make McLovin so much funnier.
No, they definitely do, because they treat him as one of their own, partially because of his confidence. In that false confidence he has, they feed it enough to where he decides, like, there's a switch that's flipped in his head to go up to the girl that he was just going to tell the time to and to go dance with her. And I still remember a realization of one of my dumpy frat bros in college, like, ladies loved him, and I could never understand it. And it was like, it was just because he was super confident. And I realized, like, dude,
yeah,
just stop second guessing yourself. Just be you. And if they like it, they like it. If they don't, they don't. And that's what I think I really like about these coming of age movies, is that switch being, you know, flipped.
Just life lessons, man. Superbad is out here changing lives.
One dick joke at a time.
That'll have to be the teaser for the episode. One dick joke at a time. One dick drawing at a time.
And I also love the scene. It would be up there for one of my favorite scenes, is when they catch McLovin when they're breaking up the party at Jewel's house. And like, Officer Slater is just so upset that McLovin had bailed on them. And he's just like, how could you do that to us? Like, he is like genuinely like upset.
Oh, man.
And of course, like, the, we shouldn't be blocking his cock. We should be
guiding it.
That's a great quote too.
I mean, do y'all just want to rattle through some of your just the best quotes?
Sure.
Because
absolutely.
That's essentially what my notes from the movie are. Just so a bunch of quotes.
This is less about the quote. Here's just three things that came from this movie that are a part of my nomenclature now. Warlocks as a slang for boob. That is just hilarious. Like, whenever they're chasing the girl.
I gotta get a look at these warlocks.
It's so funny. Yeah. It's so funny.
And they just stop everything they're doing, and they're like, we're gonna cross streets. We have to look at this.
Jogging.
Our friend is in the middle of buying alcohol for us. He may get arrested, but we've got to catch these warlocks. Man. That's so good.
The DTF, which I thought that we had maybe used that phrase before, but I on second mm-hmm. on second reading, like that was a that became a thing because of Superbad. And so then so did Stephen Glansberg too. The Stephen Glansberg thing, like oh that my one. Gosh. Like you're I still refer to people alone by themselves as Stephen Glansberg.
Yeah.
Mike the Situation gave he gave Seth Rogen credit because he said he heard it on Superbad mm. and then trademarked DTF after and made a bunch of money off of it.
Yeah.
And Seth Rogen's friends that he Seth talked about in an interview, he was like his friends got pissed. They're like, "Hey man, what the hell? You took our phrase and now this guy's profiting off of it."
Oh man.
The beginning scene when they're walking through the Coen brothers kills me. Three quarters of a BJ absolutely sent me.
But who's counting?
Yeah. I really, Matt, please bleep this out when you say it. Just bleep out the bad words. But who says that? Who thinks about that?
Well, and that's why it's great because they string together curse words. It's like Clint Eastwood and Gran Torino. It's an art form. It really he takes slinging racial slurs as a like to an art form, and that's the same way that Jonah Hill curses, which he is the world record holder for most F bombs in film. If you all didn't know that, in cinema,
really? Clint Eastwood is
Jonah Hill is for this movie, I believe that. And then
Wolf of Wall Street.
Yeah, those two, he really lets them fly in these two movies.
I think it was said, 178 times in this movie?
Yeah, it was a lot.
That's a lot.
Two throwaway quotes that I love. Mm-hmm. I love when Seth says, "Welcome to the Thunderdome," when they just show up at Jules' party. Like, it's just such a throwaway line. It's just like, "Welcome to the Thunderdome."
Which I still say all the time. The guy driving the car
says that. You mentioned that to me. Joe Latruglio's character, he says it. He goes, "Welcome to the Thunderdome." His cadence kills me. He is so excited to be at this party that he's not welcome.
He lays it on so thick. Yeah.
And I also love when Michael Cera just says, "Charlie's Angel," full throttle. What does he say? Yes. Full throttle, Charlie's full Angels 2.
Charlie's Angels 2. Yes. He said, "I hope you're ready to get drunk." And he goes, "Full throttle, Charlie's Angels 2. I wrote that down. Killed
Great line.
Me. I love when the cops are interviewing the lady at the gas station, and he goes, "What do they look like? They look like us?
An African Jew?"
Exactly like you. He said, "Odd crime for a Jew to commit. They're pretty docile."
So he was he was an African Jew.
Oh man, they also their lines when they're breaking up the party. I just wrote down. Some
oh no, it's
they
the cops.
To the crowd. We will shoot you. I assume you all have guns and crack. And this one is the most explicit of them all. Prepare to be fucked by the long dick of the law.
That's a great line.
I don't know how they got through a single day of shooting this movie without just crying every take. Right? I don't know how they got through any of these scenes.
Yeah. There are some really good outtakes of Superbad.
And that's what I'm doing tonight. Yeah, and watching Superbad outtakes.
Every line, because you kind of get the feeling that they're improving like this whole thing, like the cops character specifically. Mm-hmm. But when they're telling that story of when he met his wife at the bar, who is an actual whore, by the way. that line delivery
what
kills
a line.
Me.
Can we get 13 beers to go?
Can we have 13 beers to go, please? Oh, and when he gets a call and he's like, "There's so much blood, send backup," and he just turns it off. Oh man.
Yeah. And instead of leaving then, he's like, "We got an emergency. Oh, we gotta go. We can't pay for these."
Yeah. Yeah.
When he says he's the fastest kid alive while chasing Michael Cera.
That's the fastest kid alive.
That's the fastest kid alive. And then again, everything Joe Latruglio says kills me. You guys on MySpace or what? You know, and that was like such in a peak, like when MySpace jokes were funny. They've come back in circle and they're funny again. Mm-hmm.
I would go down on her for like several hours.
I had a general outline. I was going to go down on her for several hours. Oh my gosh. Nick, how do you think storytelling, so you know, you write a lot of blogs, a lot of articles. How do you think that storytelling ability has been impacted by movies?
You know, it ebbs and flows because how you tell a story through a film is obviously going to be much different than through through an article. But I think the one thing that I got to remember is it's all dialogue driven. And especially when I'm reporting, like it's what I'm getting from the interviews more so and less so about making myself part of the story and pontificating and that sort of deal. So, that's one thing I've thought about. If I were to ever like write a film or write a book, would it be I think it would be difficult for me to write the dialogue aspect just because I'm not used to it. I'm used to writing other people's dialogue and letting them kind of speak for it. So, dialogue's the central part of a film, but that's how at least it's impacted my writing, is making sure that it is all about the dialogue.
So what would that film be, you think, if you were to pitch one?
Yeah. We are Universal Studios. Give us your movie pitch.
So I was struggling with this because I think there is sort of a, like, I think I do have my own coming of age version, which is kind of my coming of age story. And that's a downtrodden kind of college kid who is trying to figure out where he is in the world. You know, he slips, he breaks his ankle, and he's in a wheelchair rolling around campus, and he couldn't be sadder. And then all of a sudden, Aaron Harrison starts making improbable threes, lifts the Cats to victory, and he believes he can do anything.
That sounds like not exactly. Maybe autobiographical?
Yeah. I really don't. That's where I struggle, is like I like the comedic versions of it. Because like part of this story, like if this was autobiographical, which it might be, you know, part of the story, you're on a spring break cruise doing wheelies on a bar. You know, like there's very fun, outlandish moments that are involved. But I do struggle with trying to, because the problem I have with Hollywood is just the lack of originality. And I hate that we've kind of lost our way with the big budget comedies, and I'd like to see more of them. I'd like to see more of the,
bring that Judd Apatow era back.
Yeah, it's a lost art.
Yeah, just good, big, funny comedies where you can get NASCAR licensing and have these well directed scenes that it makes it look real. You know, give me some more of that. You know. Or I could also, I could adjust my pitch to, we basically combine so it's like Big, except you put, this is almost like a Disney Channel original movie where you have just Big, except you put them in different situations, like sports wise. So it's like Mike meets Big on a football
man.
Field.
I'm in.
Yeah. So there we go. There's another one. Which, by the way, I was going through a list of those Disney Channel original movies. They really had a shtick for just like, all right, we need a cowboy movie. We're going to have a pirate one. All right, let's have a boogeyman one. We're going to do a motocross one. Oh,
boogeyman.
A drag race.
Or no, the boogeyman is Come to the Bed. Oh, man. Yeah. That terrifying.
Of the Megaplex.
Under Wraps was the Mummy one.
Yeah. So who plays you in this autobiographical in the film?
Man, the person who would play me in anything is Jason Segel.
Oh my gosh, what a good choice!
He and I are
tall, handsome,
spirits.
Funny. Like, yeah, you've got to include him in that.
Very animated too, and uses a lot of gestures. Not physical comedy too. All for it. So yes, yeah. Count me in, Jason Segel.
What do you think the? A little off topic, but so what's the most impactful film you've ever watched?
Impactful?
Like, what did you walk out of a theater you finished watching? You said, and that stuck with you for like a week or 2 weeks.
Superbad. Just got up. Two Respecting Women.
Man.
changed my entire outlook.
I remember, I watched Spotlight. This is a more serious one, but I watched Spotlight while in journalism school in college. And that one had me, and I'm Catholic too. So, you know, it hits a lot of different levels. That one, I wouldn't say messed up, but that one got me thinking about a lot of different things, naturally, but you know, that's not as fun as some of the,
I'm glad that you picked Superbad,
which, I can't even think of it off the top of my head too. Cause everyone, Cloud Atlas. Now that was when I was in college and you know, you love you know, smoking a doobie and going to the movie theaters, you get to like, oh man, and it's all of these different stories and blah 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 blah. But also, I like the score in it. I still listen to it while I write because I can't have words while I do it. But that movie, a little weird, but still enjoyable.
What's your favorite score?
The Thinker. The Cloud Atlas Sextant is very good, but I would say from Suspense, the Game of Thrones, whenever they blow up the Sept, I forget what the name of it's called, but that thing is just, I mean, it slows down, speeds up. I mean, that one is excellent. So
great episode, too.
Yeah. I forget what the name of it is. That one's a doozy as well. I can pull it up if you give me a second. Are we still going to draft our most quotable movies?
We want to do that right now.
I'm very looking forward to this. Let's go ahead and do it because
so we're drafting quotable comedies. Is that right?
Yeah. So a most quotable comedy draft. So Nick, we'll leave it up to you. Either we'll give you with you. You can choose what order you want to draft in, or I can hit a randomizer real quick.
Let's go Mitch, Dusty, me. Okay. I'll let you all take dibs. And also it was Light of the Seven.
Oh, no. The third spot is 100% the best spot to be in because we're going snake style. So he's done this before.
Advantageous spot, yeah.
I like the two. Yeah.
So I got first pick then?
I'm legitimately nervous. My heart rate right now is probably 130.
First overall pick, Mitch.
Okay, so most quotable comedies.
And how many are we going to take here? Four apiece?
That's fine.
I was thinking five.
Okay, five. We can do five. Yeah, let's do five.
First
okay.
pick, I'm going to have to go with... I'm going to go with Monty Python and the Holy Grail.
Okay.
Mm. I feel like that's a movie that, like, it's... When you watch it, you're watching it for the quotes and for, like, the moments.
True.
So, I didn't see that movie till college.
I didn't either.
But when I did see it, I saw it actually for a film class that I took. Which the esteemed Monty Python and the Holy Grail, but I still think it's one of the most quotable funny movies. So that's my first pick, Monty Python.
So I think my first pick will be less of quotable movie for me and more of to win votes. If we ever put this out on like a graphic, I'm going to take the Big Lebowski.
Oh,
I think that is really ties that's the number together. One pick.
Yeah.
It really ties the room together.
Obviously,
anything
you're not a golfer.
I don't think that a lot of today's comedies are so influenced by that film. And
calmer than
there's
you
just
are.
So many quotes. Yeah, 100%. So that's my choice. Big Lebowski has to be it.
I'm gonna go with an easy one. I'm gonna take my two here are really just teed up. They're especially for our era, but Anchorman. And with my second pick, I will be going with Wedding Crashers. Just very, you know, stage five clinger. I mean, like, you know, it was a gift, Todd. You know, like, it's some of those are just way too easy. It's the pleat of the pants, too. Like, there's so many from both of those that you can work into everyday conversation. So I'm going to start with
I personally think Anchorman is the most quotable. But honestly, man, now I'm kind of kicking myself. I could have gotten that on the reverse. This came
into my mind for the first pick with Anchorman. Mm-hmm.
My next pick two for me, fifth overall, I am going to take Dumb and Dumber.
Ooh.
With good call.
Jim Carrey.
Our pets' heads are falling off.
Yeah, that I say that so often. We have no food. We have no jobs. Our pets' heads are falling off. That's the Rockies, huh? It's the two gloves, huh? Yeah, it's the Rockies. Big gulps, like I could
big
keep
gulps,
going
huh?
with. Yeah, well, that is later. I think that is the most quoted movie of our growing up, of our childhood. Right, we all were saying that to each other. It was on TBS every 14 minutes, so you just you had to quote Dumb and Dumber.
Yeah, certainly one of the most quotable '90s comedies. Mm-hmm. So, am I six overall?
Six and seven.
I'm gonna go with The Princess Bride. Another older one.
Hmm.
I feel like there's a ton of iconic quotes. That's another one similar to Monty Python is like these movies, you come for the quotes. Like that's kind of the huge draw of it. You know, my name is Inigo Montoya. You killed my father. Prepare to die. Like all those. inconceivable. So Monty Python at first pick, Princess Bride second pick.
And then you have the next pick as well.
Okay. I think I'm going to go with a newer one now that I picked the two older ones. I am going to go with, actually, I'm going to go with the 90s one, Ace Ventura. And I'm going to say, do I have to pick one of the two? I guess When Nature Calls is the one I like more, even though people like, I feel like people like Pet Detective more.
Well, yeah, Lace's Outfinkle just might resonate a little bit, but you know, you're splitting hairs here. I'm more of a Pet Detective guy
Finkel
myself.
Finkel is Einhorn.
Shikaka. So Ace Ventura.
Okay.
All right, my
and
next pick.
Back to Dusty.
Oh, this is tough. There's so many left on the board. You know, I think I'm gonna go Borat with this pick. I don't think
because people when they do the quotes, they also have to do the bad accent.
It's the Borat voice, right?
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
Sacha Baron
My
Cohen
wife.
Really. Yes.
Yeah. King of the Castle. Yeah. There's the good pick, Dusty. That was a great pick.
He capitalized on this this era of impression, and I'm not gonna lie, I feel pretty good about that one. Nick, you're up.
Well, this next one, I alluded to it earlier because I reference it quite a bit, and that's 40-Year-Old Virgin. You know, Bags of Sand.
Bags of Sand.
You know,
yes.
They have the. You know how I know you're gay? You know, what did they say to you when you brought in the Asia poster into the frame store?
That movie single-handedly caused people to shit on Coldplay, right?
For no reason.
Listen to Coldplay. Yeah, Coldplay's a great band.
Yeah, it is. It is. But there's just so much. I've got a big trunk. I hope you can fit my bike in.
Put your bike
in.
I guess.
There's a lot of good ones. This one, my next pick's a little bit more difficult because I don't know which one is actually more quotable or not. And I don't know if it's Billy Madison or Happy Gilmore.
That's tough.
But I think it's got to be Happy Gilmore.
Really?
Because of the... I think because of the gator and
the clown. Is the clown Billy Madison?
No, it's Happy Gilmore.
That's Happy Gilmore, yeah. You're going to die, clown.
Yeah, because it's... Right. And then, you know, meet you on the ninth hole at nine. You know, like... And it's also great because you can quote it on the golf course. Like, how am I supposed to hit this one? You know, like, Bigfoot's fat foot's in the way, you know. So I'm going to go with Happy Gilmore for my fourth pick.
No, that's a good pick. Getting Adam Sandler on your board is always going to make your team a lot more attractive. So there are three that I'm between right now, and I really don't want to miss out on any of them. But I think just for sheer attraction of it, I'm going to go Hangover next pick.
Yeah, and that was one that I have on my list because it was so good that we almost beat it to death.
Yeah,
you know,
it's almost it became counterintuitive to quote The Hangover because people got so sick of it.
Yeah, it became too ubiquitous. Like it was too popular, and it's one of those that now that some time has passed, you can enjoy it a lot more and realize just how much, you know, how good that movie is. Like he still got it.
Oh yeah.
You know?
So is it me now?
Yeah, all right, Mitch, you got the next
your
two.
Final
I'm
going
to go Napoleon Dynamite. We already referenced that. That's a classic. Another one that, like, when I think about that movie, I just think about the quotes. My last one, give me Hot Rod. I'll take Hot Rod.
Ooh, a little sleeper pick, huh?
Yeah. Cool beans. I think Hot Rod... That must have come out around the same time.
Mm-hmm.
As
I think it was 2010. Hot Rod came out
2007. It was the same year as Superbad.
Oh wow!
I feel like it has like a cult following now, and people. I'm just a huge Lonely Island guy. I love Popstar. I love the Bash Brothers. I think that's on Netflix where they do like the Jose Canseco, Mark McGuire team up.
Oh yeah.
But I feel like they're always super quotable. So I'll give me Hot Rod. That's my last one.
All right, last pick for me. So I've either got to go for a crowd pleaser or one that's a little closer to my heart.
Ooh.
And I think I'm not going to follow the money. I'm going to go with what I believe. I think I'm going to go Wayne's World 1.
Okay.
I think that there is still common vernacular that's used that we that's just like part of our today everyday conversation that we don't think of, and we look back and we're like, oh, that came from Wayne's World. So that's my final pick, Wayne's World.
All right, I'm going to be torn as well, because I have some that. Man, I'm just gonna go with what I quote more, even though I do think some folks like "Oh Brother, Where Art Thou" more. I really should go Coen Brothers, but I really only know these my constituents. Every time I hear constituents, I think of that. But I'm actually going to go with another one of my favorites, and that is Dodgeball. It's just.
Great pick.
Chock full of it, you know. Dodge Wrench. There's a lot of really good ones. You can't work them in as casually as some others. But like, that's how we wanted to go. Yeah. Under 1,000 pounds of greeting card?
My friends and I entered our senior year homecoming dance doing yep, that's the one. What was that team? Is it Cobras?
The Cobras.
The purple Cobras.
Purple Cobras, yeah. That's what we did.
We're better than you, and we know it.
Interestingly enough, we left off Superbad. Does anybody regret not taking Superbad after the
picks?
Oh,
God. Yeah, damn it.
I would pick it. I would pick it. I just wanted to shout out some other movies that we haven't talked about. But, I think this movie is definitively one of the most quotable comedies.
I know, and I should have just made that last. I don't know why I skipped over
it. I was shocked
you
didn't pick it.
You know what?
I 100% thought you were going
to pick it. I'm sorry. I let down our listeners.
Do you want to change it?
I said what I said. My decision
was... We're a very graceful podcast.
You'll let me change it?
I think so.
Well,
take out...
I appreciate your all the compassion.
But that's on you.
We're taking out Dodgeball, putting in Superbad.
Okay.
If
you can live with yourself for doing that.
I was really close to picking Step Brothers as well. I feel like that's a good one, too.
Oh, gosh. That's another easy one, too.
Yeah. No, I almost regret taking Wayne's World with my last pick. Like, there's so many that I've left out, right? Airplane, I think, is you look back at that, and it is literally but why comedy movies are made the way they are today. Friday, how many quotable moments are from that film?
Because it's Friday. You
yeah,
a
ain't
job.
Got no job, and I go, bro, ain't got shit to do.
Yeah.
How the Grinch Stole Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
I know it's more looked towards... Christmas time, but people around that time, you literally can't get on Twitter and not see a gif of Jim Carrey pulling
a elf. There's a lot of quotable Christmas comedies.
Same thing. Yeah. And I think that's the part of it too, is we separate those. They almost get their own genre. So.
Yeah. We said Step Brothers. Somebody commented and said Pulp Fiction when I sent this out. And
I'm not sure.
But I don't know if they know what a comedy is.
Yeah.
No,
that really kind of blew me away.
The ending's not exactly lighthearted.
So, Nick, before we let you go, we always finish with one question. What is your favorite movie snack?
Like, what's your setup for a movie theater trip?
First off, I sneak in a drink. I'm cheap like that.
Got to.
Don't have it made like
my
that.
My wife is more of a gummy person, but I'm just popcorn. And like I eat pop. Like the hardest part of my most recent dieting adventure is not snacking late at night. And I love popcorn. Like that's whenever I'm going to treat myself to like a Friday night, it is. We're going to pour a little bourbon on the rocks, probably Old Forester, you know, and then enjoy a bag of popcorn. I love it. I know it's cliche, but the saltiness, the lightness of it, the fact that you can just busily just chow down.
And it's so light. You don't feel gross eating it. It's just so easy to get through.
Gummies like sit weird in my stomach and I get all the sugar. It doesn't
diarrhea well, immediately so. After. Yeah. I understand the gummy feeling. Yeah.
Do you have a beverage? Like to get in a movie theater, do you prefer a soda or?
I can't drink much because I hate having to take.
Right, that definitely factors
in.
In.
So you've got a
tiny bladder really hurts.
I've never understood the people who like do the beer at the
psychos.
Movie theater,
that's who they are.
Just, you know,
people who want to go for a good time and not for the movie. Right. It's always somebody's girlfriend who's watching the newest Marvel movie who doesn't really care what's going on. She's like, "Oh, I'll grab a beer." Well, Nick, thanks for joining us. Do you have anything you want to plug?
just I appreciate y'all so much for letting me on. This has been fun to do different from just going on the radio, you know, 5 days a week. We got podcasts on the radio. I'm 7 to 9 each morning live in Louisville on Big X Sports Radio. You can find all of my stuff wherever it may be, whether it's Kentucky Sports Radio or whatever, at Roush KSR on Twitter. So that's kind of my central location. From there, you can go anywhere.
Awesome.
So I'd like to give you guys a little bloop and thank y'all for letting me talk super bad for an hour.
Incredible. Boop. Nick, thanks again for joining us. If you ever need to stock up on some bourbon, just hit me up. I've got a growing collection as we speak.
Wonderful, wonderful. Thanks, guys.
Good to talk to you.
Shout out to our sponsor, One Oak Wedding Venue, our editor, Matthew Powell. From Mitch Wiley, I'm Dusty Koshreza, and this has been My Favorite Movie Is.
Have a good week. Be kind and rewind.
Ladies and gentlemen, this episode was brought to you by One Oak Event Venue. One Oak Event Venue is a wedding venue, event venue located in Nicholasville, Kentucky, on the Fayette County line in Jessamine County, Kentucky. Turn your one-of-a-kind dream into a reality. Call 859-888-0591 or 859-MORE-ART. That's 859-MORE-ART. One-of-a-kind event venue, One Oak.